We're here in this brand new state-of-the-art performance capture studio, and I've been told not to call it motion capture because it's performance capture, because they're both very different things. You've got a long history in both film, television, and now into video games. How big of a deal is this?
To have all of the elements together in one studio is a really huge deal. When I started doing motion capture, I had to travel down to Los Angeles often to get to a studio that had everything, meaning a soundstage, a facial system to capture facial and voice at the same time. We actually started doing it at Electronic Arts probably about 8 or 9 years ago. But to have it as integrated as it is here in a perfect soundstage is kind of unbelievable, especially when it's about 1 minute walk from my desk. What makes this a performance capture stage isn't necessarily the body volume that we're in now. When I say that, I mean the actual mocap part of the volume is what measures the movement of my body around this space. But it's how we combine that with a facial cam that measures facial performance and microphones and audio, and all that is jammed together with time code, and it travels all the way up to editorial. So everything is captured at once, which wasn't the case about 3 or 4 years ago. It was really special to actually be at a facility that was doing it all at once. In the beginning, when I did this sort of thing, I would do the body on the floor, and sometimes I would even capture the voices ahead of time. I called it karaoke acting, because the actors would listen to it. I would create click tracks like beep, 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 and on the third beep they would start acting and saying the words. So they were having to mime in the volume something that was even they might have even said it, or it could have been another actor. So they had to karaoke act the entire scene, and then a week later I would take them into another volume that was just for facial, this tiny little volume with lights and cameras all around them, and they would do it again. This time, so I would take the body, I would take the voice, and I would take the face, and I would line it all up together, and then we'd all sit there and wonder why everything looks so disconnected. And I mean, it's because we captured all three at different times. So it's kind of a no-brainer to try to bring all three into the same volume. But it's proven, you know, difficult to do, because, you know, everyone's using different technology. And with this volume here, we've adopted the head-mounted cameras that you would see on Avatar as our primary facial system. So we take that as the base for the facial performance, and then we hand key on top of that. But it gives us a huge head start. In some cases, when we're getting really great data from a character, we can do as much as 2 minutes in like a couple of days, whereas the usual sort of rate for facial animation is much slower. Sometimes, 30 seconds a week or something, depending on the model you're working with. So the idea is to make everything easier and quicker, because in video games we have the timelines for actually creating our assets are getting less and less and less. And especially with something like story in a video game, the process of making a game is quite long, but usually the story comes together at the very end. So it's a big race to get it all in the game. So anything that can cut time off of getting those performances in the game helps us. So that's essentially what we're getting in this volume here, with a really high quality body volume, the HMC cameras which capture facial, and the microphones that we've got, microphones lavved to each of the actors, and two boom microphones that we use during shots. All of that capturing together, along with our filmic pipeline, which pretty much means that we're using video cameras not just to use as reference to what we shot on stage. We're using it to actually block animation too. So the cameras, instead of being these wide shots of what happened on stage that day, we turn them to movie cameras. Like most films will have an A and a B camera. We have four of them, and we'll come around and I'll get overs, close-ups, and wides. And this is a really good way to actually validate the performances that we're getting, to make sure that we're getting the eye lines and the emotional beats. And that, all of that goes to a monitor that we can watch it in high fidelity and know that we got the performance. Because that was the biggest problem, I think, in the early days of mocap, is you never really knew if you had it, and you kind of went on a hunch. Now I can see right away that we have it, and we don't have to make our decisions right away like we used to. Now I can actually send all of the video footage up to an editorial room, have a professional editor go through everything, find the best takes, assemble them together in a story, and we can preview that to validate that we got the actual performance. Now that's different than we've ever done in gaming before. Sometimes it means combining like 7 or 8 different takes to create a performance. And because we're using cameras, every time, like, you know, if I cut between 2 performances, the actors will be in different places, or they're, you know what I mean? It won't necessarily match, but because we're using cameras and we're cutting, we can basically just jump from one, you know, we'll jump from one scene to the next. We do all that in editorial, and that way we're getting the best performances, and we're mining all of the performances to get what we want, and telling stories that we didn't even know was in the performance, right? As you know, like, a lot of storytelling happens in editorial.
Yeah, most of our show itself happens in editorial. So trust me, I know exactly what you mean. But I'm just wondering, though, you're very passionate about performance capture. And this is a very impressive studio. Saying, are you happy with it, doesn't seem like the right question. But I'm just wondering, have you guys reached the pinnacle? Is this what you guys can do with the technology and the money you guys have now today? Or is this just sort of a building block to a bigger, possible, better sort of future for performance capture?
Yeah, I'd say like there are definitely limitations, specifically with the armature head-mounted cameras. So, you know, you can imagine 2 characters in some sort of hand-to-hand combat. The armatures stick out about 9 to 13 inches, so they hit each other and that sort of thing. But in terms of limitations, like there are fewer and fewer every year I work in performance capture. And for me, that just means that the technology is actually becoming invisible. So I'm no longer having to make decisions on set to make something work for the technology. I basically say, roll it. Everyone gets out of their T-pose and we start performing the scene. So I think it's the technology is making everything seamless. The quality of the data is making the quality of the animation and the performances better, and we have to do less hand keying on top of it. All of that just means that all I really focus on is performance, whereas there was a million other things I had to focus on before. All I'm looking for is that emotional beat now, instead of saying, oh geez, like is he outside the volume, or is he blocking those markers too much? Like, am I getting good data from this? I'm able to forget about all of that and focus on that, because I think that, you know, it's just like no one's going to give you an award for putting a scene together with 5 or 6 actors and some dialogue. I mean, you see that on film and television all the time. People are looking for moving stories, reversals and change and dramatic performance. You know, they're looking for story, and the elements of that, you know, they're not easy to find. Like, you have to be focused on that in order to get them. Mm-hmm. Great storytelling, you know, it doesn't come immediately, and right from script to post, the more you can be focused on performance and the less on the technology, and the better performances we're getting. I've noticed it just in the sense that we're, as I say, blanket coveraging our scenes and treating it more like a film set. The more I do coverage, and meaning I'll shoot a scene and then I'll do another part of the scene, and then I'll pick up another part of the scene, and I'll pick up another part of the scene, and then I take that all, not really knowing, but just having a feeling for what I got, I take it all up to editorial, and that's kind of this additional magic. So I think that's what we're doing now, and it might have more to do with our pipeline and how we're using the technology than the actual technology itself, because, you know, these body volumes are all over North America. You know, the head-mounted cameras, Avatar use them, they're being used by lots of studios, and reference cameras, same, but it's how we're using them now. And more importantly, how we're combining them with a film pipeline, which is not a catchphrase. It's actually a pipeline that's kind of been tried and tested over the last 50 years, and it makes editorial the center of all your production. We didn't used to do that. Now that we are, our workflow is really visual, and there's less explaining to do. You know, when I go in to get scenes approved to a creative director, all they have to do is sit and watch, and it's all there. Like, I even throw mood music underneath it and sound effects, and, you know, because I want to get everyone in line with what we're going to make, and it just makes it so easy to get to the next step, because, you know, this is just the beginning. There's so much work that happens in post-production after this. The animators are keying on top of all this facial. There's still a ton of work. Like, it's incredible how much work goes in after this. But once they have the feeling, the tone, and the vision, which they get out of a really good solve edit, I don't have to explain anything. It's just all there. I just say, hey, go look at the solve edit. Look what I put into that. I mean, and then that's all you really need.
Well, you're throwing a lot of terms at us. Some of us, some of them we do understand, some of them they don't. But for our listeners, one that I don't think any of them would be familiar with is the T-pose, which is a term you used in that last answer. Could you sort of just explain that to us quickly so that we know what you're talking about?
Yeah, so a T-pose is how we begin every single take or every single shot in a mocap or PCAP volume, motion capture, performance capture. And the T-pose is like a handshake to the computers. So every time an actor puts his hands up in a T-pose, the computer shakes his hand and says, yes, I know who you are. Because every single actor has a different marker set on their body. Even though they look all the same to us from the edge, they all have a unique marker set. And when they put their hands up into a T-pose, that's like shaking hands to the computer, and the computer says, aha, I know who you are.
This whole setup here, you were explaining before that the big difference now, one of the big differences now is that the cameras can recognize you front and back, which is fine when you have one actor, but when you have multiple actors, it gets challenging. But this setup allows you to do that, though.
Well, and they all did. I mean, that's the basics of motion capture is all the different cameras work to actually locate where the markers are in the volume. But depending on the resolution of the cameras and the placement and the proximity to the actor, all of those things will determine how robust that data is, meaning it'll overcome the occlusion. So in the very beginnings of motion capture, I would often perform scenes, I would have to move people away from each other. Like I have an intimate scene between two characters and I would purposely move them 10 feet away from each other in like a love scene, and then an animator would put them together in post. Now with the coverage we have and the resolution of the cameras and the placement, we've got them up high, up low, everywhere. The placement makes it easy to overcome occlusion. Even with up to 11 characters in the volume, I'm getting good enough data.
For us here in Toronto, this is a big deal to have this here. I mean, in the world of video game making, this is pretty much as good as it gets, right?
Yeah, I mean, for 2012 right now, you're not going to get a better setup for face, body, voice, and actually validating it. So in terms of playback, because at the end of the day, you need to see the work you're shooting. So we've got a system here that allows you to capture it and visualize it on set. We've got instantaneous playback, four different cameras, high quality on a 60-inch screen. So you can get right in there and make sure that you're getting the right performance. I think that some of the challenges I've had in other volumes up till now is that it was really difficult to know whether you had it or not, because it wasn't set up for shot-by-shot validation like you would see on a film set. And because these are scripted events, these are cinematics, they're going to end up in a shot by, you know, I can imagine that this is going to happen in a close-up, and I can imagine that this is going to happen in a wide shot. So if by bringing cameras into mocap, by bringing cameras onto the floor, you're able to start animating actors to camera, and this is how they're trained. I mean, actors, it's not a theater background that gets them ready for, you know, even though theater is very important, that gets them ready to act on a film set. They're all acting to camera. They know their eye lines. They know where the lens is. They know how often, like, this is how people are trained. And that's what was missing, I think, in the beginning of performance capture. And I try to get cameras into the volume as much as possible, right in next to the actor, so everybody knows, you know, what they're playing to. Albeit, you know, there's many different cameras to play to, but I'll make a point of telling the actors how I plan to cover this. And it'll give them an idea what kind of movement. For instance, you'll have much more movement in a wide master for a film shot than you would in a tight close-up. So the bonus of working in a filmic pipeline is they take the entire day to shoot that scene, and they start with the wide, and then they go to the medium, and then they get into the overs. By the time they get to the close-up, there's someone sitting right in front of the actor saying, okay, I need you to be really still for this. But I can capture it all at once, which is great, but it's also challenging because I could go back into post-production, and what I'll see is that the actor was moving way too much for a tight close-up. He'll be all over the frame, and that's something that you wouldn't have noticed maybe just sitting on the side of the volume.
I know it's tough to put a figure on it, but are we looking at sort of a multi-million-dollar space here?
Yeah, I'd say somewhere between one and two.
That's expensive.
Yeah, no kidding.
Well, I guess in the end it all sort of pays for itself with the projects that you guys are working on. But I'm just wondering, so you're bringing in people here who are used to working on stage in front of cameras. I mean, as far as I understand, your entire cast is brand new to this, with this game. What are some of the difficulties you have bringing in those sort of people trained with camera and stage and putting them in this area where there's 40 cameras and they're all looking at you from different directions, and you have to, you know, keep that in mind when you're acting?
Well, I think the first challenge, I think, is actors that are having to perform in what looks like their underwear, like a tight black unitard. This can sometimes be unnerving. The lack of actually a main camera that you would have on a film or television set that everything plays to. Also, the pacing, because we're able to shoot, I mean, on a film and television set, if you're really moving, I mean, really, really moving, 8 pages, 10 pages a day, and those are like TV shows that have been around for years, and the cast, you know, they've got all their sets lit from the top, and they can move really quickly. We have the ability to do 18 pages in a day, and I'm not rushing everybody through that. It's just because we don't have lights, I don't have dollies, I don't have to set up, you know, complex focus marks, you know, for actors and cameras. I mean, that's what a film and TV set is all about. It's about capturing that performance with the cameras. For me, cameras come way later. And I think for actors that they find that challenging because, you know, in terms of being off book, which is what we call knowing all your lines, it's more important in mocap and PCAP than in any other, I think, entertainment genre other than theater. When you walk onto a motion capture set, you better know your lines because I could run the whole scene front to back. And when you don't, it just means that things go slower and I'm not going to be able to get the master that I want. But I'm not held back by cameras and lighting and sets. I can flop a set in a just by changing some proxies or some geometry in the volume. It becomes a completely different set. So I think for actors, it's the pace, it's the lack of cameras, it's the sort of, I call it the hostile environment, where, you know, the circle of light where all the cameras are, and it's helping them forget about all that and to focus on each other, really, you know, to listen to the other actors and to really relax into the stage, you know, and just really focus on their performances and about, you know, what they're saying, you know, the dialogue back and forth and not worrying about technical things, you know.
Speaking of technical things, though, huge number of cameras, huge number of microphones, and just tons of computers back behind us. This has got to be probably one of the bigger pains in your asses to get up and going. How is this process just sort of getting everything to, you know, talk to each other properly in the way you want it?
Well, it's actually quicker than you'd think. We've actually set up we did a mobile setup in Pinewood Studios in Toronto, I think about 6 months ago, and we had the stage set up in 3 days. So that's the trusses, cameras, the computer capture systems, everything.
Everything calibrated?
3 days. Wow. Yeah, and that isn't new, because even 10 years ago, you were able to do that with a body volume. What's different is that we're doing it in a soundstage with facial, a very dense, you know, T160 volume. And in a soundstage, we're able to put that together. So, and also the playback, as I said, is extremely important.
I've been trying to get little bits and pieces out of some of the actors and some of the people involved. We host a video game show. Everybody's very excited for Blacklist, especially since it's being made here. What kind of nuggets can you give us as the game is in production?
Well, I don't know. I haven't been briefed on what I can say and what I can't say.
Oh, feel free to speak freely then.
In that case, there's no restrictions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I would say, I think that what you're going to see more than what we've done in the past, I think you're going to see a lot more, I call it action over dialogue. Instead of having all these action moments and you sort of end up in a scripted event with some people talking, you know, talking heads back and forth, you know, to deliver some exposition, what we're doing is we're taking that and we're putting action over that. So we're combining action and dialogue together. So all of our scripted events try to contain an element of that. Not just that, we've brought on a TV writer who's native to Toronto, who's been helping us with all our dialogue, and we've been really focused on creating scenes about change and scenes with reversals, scenes that are ultra dramatic. So very, really focused, conflict-ridden scenes with change in them. So, 'cause in video games, you'll find that a lot of the stories come from level design, or someone will be asking you to, like, look, I need to, you know, there's going to be a landmark that I need to hit up ahead. Could you talk about that in your scene? And in terms of dramatic storytelling, the only thing that people really want to see are things that change. Like, stories are about the gap between what the audience expects and what they actually get. So if the scene is what the scene is about, then you've lost already. So it needs to be about all those elements that, you know. So we've been really focused and really disciplined about making all of our scenes very powerful and impactful. And some of the scenes that we've shown already, we at E3, we showed a a Sam combat scene with one of our villains, and it was a really great example of action over dialogue in the sense that he was throwing the villain all around the room, and it was just full of action as opposed to that talking head thing, which we're really fighting against.
Yeah, we were there. We saw it. It was very, very impressive. This has been spectacular. I mean, it looks very cool, and we're really excited to see Blacklist when it comes out spring next year. Are we still aiming for that?
Yeah, still aiming for spring.